You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jamie and Jason. This is episode 179. Today, Jamie and I are going to be looking at the question, was Jesus or is Jesus a myth? Jamie, this is just another one of those common misconceptions, we'll say, about Jesus. I think the place that I most often hear this is when I'm talking to kids on campus, on college campus, or interacting with other young people. And I think, honestly, this is just one of those that has floated out there in the popular mindset that maybe Jesus didn't exist, or there's no good evidence that Jesus actually existed. It's kind of all built on folklore and fables. And to me, it is probably the most ridiculous. I mean, there are others that are pretty ridiculous. There's a lot of bad ideas about Jesus. There's no shortage of misconceptions about who he was, what he accomplished, what was his nature. And of course, we want to set the record straight as best we can from scripture on all these subjects and looking at Jesus as a person. This is one where I honestly think people just kind of repeat what they've heard before. You know, they if I didn't know better, talking with some folks, it's almost as though, you know, half historians out there are skeptical on whether Jesus lived and the other half are pretty sure he did live. And that just does not represent the facts at all. And so for those who maybe would come across somebody who says that, it's pretty certain they haven't done their homework. It's pretty certain that they heard that from a guy like maybe a Bill Maher or a Richard Dawkins or somebody like that. I don't honestly know where it always comes from. But of course, there's always been extreme skeptics. And there, even in the first century, there were some extreme skeptics about, you know, what Jesus accomplished and what he could be. So this is not a new thing, but to deny that Jesus existed at all is frankly just kind of out of left field from, you know, just not a little bit short of insane, just because there's just so much evidence. And we've talked before on this show, Jamie, about all the evidence, historical evidence, archaeological evidence for the miracles of Jesus, for the resurrection in particular of Jesus. You know, we've talked about how there's more evidence that Jesus rose from the dead, historically speaking. You know, we're not factoring out faith. Faith is imperative. It's necessary that we have faith in what the evidence is pointing to. But the simple fact is the historical evidence, the concrete evidence in front of our eyes points to Jesus's resurrection better than things like, was it Julius Caesar who was murdered, or was it some other Caesar who was stabbed 23 times, or crossing the Rubicon, or even some of the things Alexander the Great did? There's better evidence in terms of how close the manuscripts were to the time of the event. There's better, there's just a plethora of sources on Jesus's resurrection. But we're even getting down to Jesus's existence in this episode in particular. So I wanted to share this because this is helpful. I think you might wonder, okay, what does the scholarly skeptic say? And so here's a quote from Bart Ehrman. And we've referenced him before. He's a New Testament scholar, but he's definitely very skeptical of the claims of Jesus. He does not believe Jesus is or was God. He does not believe that Jesus rose from the dead. But this is what Bart Ehrman does say. He says, "The view that Jesus existed is held by virtually every expert on the planet." Okay, so if Bart Ehrman, who is truly anti-Christian in his writings, if you just read what he said, he's discounting the reliability of the Bible, he's discounting the reliability of eyewitness testimony in all of his writings virtually, and yet he says, look, the experts know, almost all of them know, that Jesus certainly existed. He certainly existed. And Jamie, just from like a purely objective standpoint, when I think about things like the history has been split in half by the birth of Jesus. Like, we literally count our years based on what one, I believe it was a priest or bishop from history. Literally, he was trying to calculate the birth of Jesus. And now our historical timeline is based on the life of Jesus. You know, we say things like, well, I'm going to Sacramento and I'm going to be there in the year 2023. In that simple statement, you are saying in a city that is named after a sacrament or named after the Lord's Supper that Jesus instituted, I'm going to be at this place the number of years after Jesus was allegedly born. And just to look at it like that, from that objective standpoint, like, you look everywhere, the evidence for Jesus's impact on this world is astounding. Like, literally, people can talk about guys like Genghis Khan and Alexander the Great and Napoleon, whoever else. Nobody has come close to impacting the world as Jesus of Nazareth. And the fact that his name is so recognizable that he makes his way into all the major world religions. Like, everybody in Islam knows Jesus was real. Jesus really existed. And everybody in Hinduism, you know, if you look at Hinduism even, people talk about how Jesus was an avatar. Now, granted, they get his identity wrong, but we would very much disagree with the idea that Jesus was an avatar of Krishna, but they say he lived. Yeah, they know he lived. And Buddhists, same thing. They say he was a very enlightened man. So this is just one of those extreme views on Jesus. But I'm going to kick it over to you, Jamie. What are some thoughts as you hear that this is kind of a growing popular opinion out there?
Yeah, in one sense, it doesn't surprise me, you know, Jason, because we live in a period of time in history which certainly is not unique to human history, but it is a time in which we are busy about erasing history, pretending like things never happened or people never existed. You know, right? We see this a lot with all over the country. We've seen over the last couple of years, there have been people rioting and tearing down statues. And, you know, and all of this is, of course, to completely deny the history that is. And most of that's driven by a narrative, right? They want to present another history that is very much different and absolutely not the actual true history that is presented. And this would fall into that category as well. So it doesn't surprise me, in one sense, that we see more of this kind of thing. I'm in full disclosure, I personally haven't really run into this myself. But then again, I'm also not in a college town like, you know, Jason is. So you run into a little bit more radical elements in those places. Certainly lots of challenges to the truth of Jesus and the truth of Scripture. And, you know, as you engage people for the gospel, you run into a lot of that kind of stuff. But I haven't this specific one. But it doesn't surprise me either, because, you know, given everything else and even the fact that we don't know what is true and we're more confused over what to believe now than we ever have believed. And so one of the things I want to present is a challenge that was actually given by a Australian theologian a couple of years ago. His name was Dr. John Dickinson. And what Dr. John Dickinson did was he put out a worldwide invitation to find any professor of history or professor of New Testament history or any sort of secular studies that relate to history. Find any professor who would be willing to recognize and even argue that Jesus as a historic figure never existed. And in fact, he said, when he put out this challenge to the world, so to speak, that if you find him even one, he would willingly eat a page or two of his own Bible. And now you think that's pretty extreme, right? But it shows you the confidence of a guy who knows, like, you're not going to find one, right? You may find a professor of gender studies or a professor of lesbian art or something like that that would argue maybe Jesus didn't exist as a historic figure. But anybody with any sort of working knowledge of history is not going to do that. And here we are today, years later, and still not one professor has come forward to say, yeah, no, Jesus never existed. You know, and that tells you, Jason, we're talking atheists here. We're talking agnostics here. We're talking, I mean, it really just underscores the point you already made. This is actually a settled historic fact. And the reason it's a settled historic fact is there's over 14,000 historic first person proofs for the birth, life, ministry, death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. And I mean, think about that, really. Could you come up with 14,000 first person proofs that you exist? I mean, you're alive, you're here now, and yet I'm going to guess you could not come up with 14,000 historic first person proofs that you exist. I couldn't either, right? Maybe we could come up with 1,000, maybe, if I get every single person I've ever talked to in my life. Maybe that expands to, let's say, 5,000, I don't know, 6,000. But still, 14,000. And you're right, the wealth of that historically is dramatically more than what you have in most historic figures. Think about, there's a congressman, Butler, who's pretty famous in American history during the time of the, just before the Civil War. And he's famous for beating almost to death a U.S. senator, Senator Sumner. And here's the thing. You could probably only find about 100 first-person proof documentations of this congressman ever existing. Yet he's a part of any history on the Civil War that you're ever going to take. Any class or book about the Civil War includes this incident. It was a big deal, right? It was a big moment in American history. And yet the amount of evidence to support this event even happening is ridiculous. Ridiculously low is what I'm saying. And same thing with the Constitution. Do you realize that our understanding of the Constitutional Convention is basically from the writings of one guy? And that's James Madison, who, you know, wrote a lot during the Constitutional Conventions, which were closed to the public. They were closed to the media. There's very little historic evidence for what actually went down in that room. And we've taken it on the account of basically one guy. And sure, there are a few corroborating evidence from other guys as they wrote, you know, little pieces in their journals about this, that, or the other thing. And so we have enough to corroborate. Okay, you know, if you say, you know, if your narrative includes 10 events and I can prove, you know, I can prove with other sources that four of those events were true, then it's probably likely that all 10 are true, right? So that's a reasonable historic understanding. And yet, that's very weak in terms of number of accounts or first-person accounts, right? Those first-person proofs. And then here we have Jesus, who has over 14,000. And they're not just people who follow Jesus or believed in Jesus, right? You have Jewish historians like Josephus, who wrote a lot about Jesus, either directly and indirectly, right? A lot of his were indirect references to Jesus, but he's a secular scholar, certainly not a follower of Jesus. I shouldn't say secular, but not a follower of Jesus. He was a Jewish historian, but certainly not a believer in Jesus and not part of the cult, quote unquote, if you want to put it that way. But yet here he is presenting the same even truth. And I would even go one step further. I think one of the greatest evidences for the truth of Jesus comes to us in the form of Jesus' brothers, who not only did they not believe in Jesus, now they didn't question his existence because clearly he did exist. He was their brother. They knew that. But they would even go to their death holding on to those beliefs, even though they originally had thought he was just a crazy dude, right? So you have not only just an incredible wealth of history, Jason, here, but you even have people that are willing to die, to physically go to their death, to hold on to not only the existence of Jesus, but all the historic accounts of Jesus being true, and certainly the biblical narratives being true, that was willing giving up their life for.
Oh yeah. And I mean, honestly, like, people should know that there's a ton of non-Christian sources, and I'm going to be the first to say we shouldn't prize non-Christian sources over Christian sources, because of course Christians, followers of Jesus, are going to write about him, but that doesn't mean they're less powerful sources of evidence. Of course they matter, because when we learn about anybody from history, it's handed down by people who knew them best, right? If it's somebody who had zero contact and didn't know any of the eyewitnesses and couldn't talk to any of the eyewitnesses versus the one who was actually there when it happened, you know, we want to go to the eyewitnesses. So the New Testament is the best evidence for Jesus. And the evidence is simply read it, read the New Testament and discover for yourself that this is a first person in at least two cases. It's John and Matthew. They were actually there. They saw Jesus do these things. They witnessed his him appearing to them in resurrection form. And Mark is really just relaying what Peter's preaching was on. We get that from one of the later Christian historians explain that to us. And Luke was a careful historian. People who have tried to debunk Luke, like Frank Morrison, who wrote the book Who Moved the Stone, he literally set out to write a book refuting Christianity. And yet, time after time, he came up against the incredible accuracy of guys like Luke. And Luke is, even today, even by secular historians, people admit that Luke was a fantastic and careful historian. Like, he kept very careful notes, because the way he describes voyages, for instance, across the Mediterranean, that fits exactly with what you would expect. What he saw, the cities he went to, the cultural references, they all fit with what we know from archaeology and other historical authors. But I think it's just important to give some quotes from these non-Christian sources, because just like if you're in a court case and you have evidence, let's say positive evidence for something, but it's from somebody who had no affinity for the defendant, but yet what they say still supports that defendant. It's valuable in court, because, you know, an enemy's testimony that supports your case is more powerful than someone who's loyal. Only in that sense that it's just impressive that someone would still confirm what the Christians were saying. But this is what we got. So, first of all, you know, you could look at sources like rabbinic tradition. The Talmud mentions Jesus. I would say don't expect the Talmud to be a very accurate portrayal of Jesus, because keeping in mind, Jewish people, and particularly the rabbinic writers, were not followers of Jesus. They saw Jesus as a false Messiah from the beginning. That's what they were later taught, and so their heirs would pick up on the same idea. But what we do have is them saying things like Jesus did some kind of sorcery. Now that's interesting, because if Jesus did do miracles and you wanted to explain it away, you would probably, as a Jew, you would want to attribute it to something that was antithetical to the Torah. You'd want to say basically this person was in league with the devil. Just like the scribes and Pharisees did in the Gospels, that same tradition about Jesus, it's a false representation of Jesus, but that is picked up in the Talmud, and they talked about him as though he was some kind of magician or sorcerer. And what that does is, yeah, it's negative testimony towards Jesus in the sense that it's got his character wrong, it's got his nature wrong, but it admits, hey, there was this guy Jesus, and he did some pretty incredible things. We're going to attribute it to, you know, to the devil, but we can't deny he did some incredible things. And then you have the Quran. Again, the Quran is not a, I wouldn't say, as a Christian, I don't believe it's very reliable in many respects, but historically speaking, it's written so long after the life of Jesus that you wouldn't really give it the weight that you would give other sources. But it mentions Jesus and it admits Jesus is alive. But more relevant would be sources like Lucian of Samosata. He said, speaking of Christians, he says, the one whom they still worship today, the man in Palestine who was crucified because he brought this new form of initiation into the world. Now, Lucian of Samosata, Lucian was not a Christian. He was actually a satirical comedian, basically. He was like the Bill Maher of the early second century. And he was one who was basically trying to debunk Christianity and saying, look, how ridiculous is this? These guys are still worshiping that guy that got crucified. It's ridiculous. That's his whole point. When you read through, you see he's mocking it. And yet what he doesn't do is say the guy that they're worshiping didn't even exist. He knows Jesus existed. He's assuming, of course, Jesus existed. And then you have guys like Mara Bar Serapion, who basically says, look through history. And this, again, this is a guy who wrote early on, probably sometime in the late first century. But Mara Bar Serapion was Syrian, not a Christian. And he said, if you look through history, you look at what they did to Socrates, you look at what they did to Pythagoras and others, you know, they killed these great men. And then he out of nowhere, he says, or what did it avail the Jews to kill their wise king since their kingdom was taken away from them from that time on? You know, how interesting is that? He calls Jesus a wise king. He puts them up there with Socrates and Pythagoras, these very scholarly wise men. And he says, look, this is what we do. We're a horrible human race. We kill the greatest among us. He doesn't follow Jesus. He doesn't believe Jesus rose from the dead, but he admits Jesus was a wise man. And then Tacitus probably would be the best, other than Josephus. Josephus is easily the best non-Christian confirmation of this, but Tacitus is today widely acknowledged as a first-rate historian as well. He was Roman, and Cornelius Tacitus said this. He wrote in his annals about the fire that happened in AD 64, and basically Nero blamed the Christians, and so it's an interesting thing how he's working it out, and he's no friend of Christians. In fact, he's all for the persecuting of Christians. He wants people to worship the emperor, and yet he also didn't like Nero, who he's writing about, who was the emperor before this time. But this is what he says: therefore, to squelch the rumor, Nero created scapegoats and subjected to the most refined tortures those whom the common people called Christians, hated for their abominable crimes. Their name comes from Christ, who during the reign of Tiberius had been executed by the procurator Pontius Pilate. Suppressed for the moment, the deadly superstition broke out again, not only in Judea, the land which originated this evil, but also in the city of Rome, where all sorts of horrendous and shameful practices from every part of the world converge and are fervently cultivated. Now, obviously, Tacitus is not, he's not a Christian, and he's even anti-Christian because he calls Christianity an evil. And he says, you know, this was a deadly superstition. And yet again, he admits that Christ is the founder of Christianity, that Christ was during the reign of Tiberius, which is exactly what the Gospels say, and under the rule of Pontius Pilate, Jesus was executed. And so you look at this, and there's just, I'm only naming a handful. There are many more, by the way. Jamie, you've already mentioned Josephus. But if all these guys Now think about this just objectively. All these non-Christian historians are writing about Jesus, even though there was emperors to write about, there was all these wars going on, and yet they're writing about this Jewish rabbi from kind of an obscure town in an obscure region of the Roman Empire. The fact that they would write anything about him is incredible, because they don't just go around talking about everybody. Even guys like James, Jesus's brother, he's mentioned once in Josephus, but Jesus is mentioned twice, and then you look at how much he wrote about all of the Roman Empire. The fact that he would bring up Jesus at all is incredible. And so all that to say, this is just powerful circumstantial evidence for Jesus's existence, because what you're having to say, if you believe that Jesus didn't exist, you're having to say that all these non-Christian, even anti-Christian sources were totally oblivious to the fact that they were writing about a mythical person that a group of Christians decided to make up to start a religion. Like that's literally what you're saying. And if they were oblivious way back then, you know, how could we have confidence in anything else they said, right? Well, how do we know they were right about anything? You know, the same guys that talk about these emperors of that time and the Jewish wars of that time were writing about Jesus. You know, it just makes no sense. You basically have to say, we can't know anything from history if these guys are wrong.
Yeah, it's true. It literally is true. And the irony, of course, is it's intellectually dishonest to a degree, right? The historic method has long been on the preponderance of evidence, you know, much like the scientific method, it's on the preponderance of evidence, meaning if you're going to break from historic tradition, then the onus is on you to prove that everybody else was wrong, right? So you literally, if you're going to say Jesus didn't exist, then you have to prove every one of these guys is wrong. And you have to prove that, you know, over 14,000 documented encounters with Jesus are false, right? That was all made up, that somebody got together with literally thousands of people and said, hey, let's collude to a conspiracy. That doesn't make any logical sense, right? How do you get that many people from that many places over that great a span of time to all collude with you on some mass or vast conspiracy? Like, that just, it doesn't hold any logic. It doesn't hold any, you know, it doesn't work. A reasonable person would not believe a claim like that, given the preponderance of evidence. You know, it's almost to me, Jason, equal to, I was reading an article this morning about somebody's claim that 9/11 was not a terrorist attack, that it was an insider job. You know, we've heard this conspiracy. It's been around for 21 years. But every time I read something like this, I'm just like, wow, I'm really amazed by the fact that you saw with your own eyes the event. Like, we've all seen that video, right? We've seen it for years and years and years, and completely legit. Like, there is no question about the authenticity of that event. And yet you still have somebody out there, and we just be like, well, that's just a radical conspiracy theorist. Well, we would say the same thing. If you're going to go around saying Jesus does not exist, that he never historically existed, then you're the radical crazy conspiracy theorist, because you've got this massive weight of history that you're completely denying, rejecting, and with no evidence. Prove this conspiracy, right? Show us the fact that Jesus never existed. Show us the fact that all these guys were in cahoots with each other, show us the fact that 14,000, over 14,000 documents are wrong, that they're not true. And of course, we have every confidence in telling you to do that. Prove us wrong, because you're not going to prove us wrong. Literally, this event in human history is so well supported, you cannot deny the existence. Now, is there room for discussion over what did Jesus do? Did he rise from the dead? Yeah, those are great questions, and we love to engage that as well. But that's a separate one from just simply, did he exist? Was he an actual person? Was he a historic man who lived in a period of time? And the answer to that is clearly, overwhelmingly, yes. The other piece, you know, Jason, that you mentioned is the global phenomena. If, let's say, even if you did get all those people to collude, how does it become a global phenomena that continues on to this day? I mean, so if I say to you, hey, do you know who Jay-Z Knight is? I would assume you'd probably say no. If I say, do you know who Ramtha, the spirit of the warrior princess, is? you'd probably say no. Why? Because this is a cult that's in my neck of the woods. It's a local cult here. And it's a big thing in this area. But how many people in Oregon know about it? Or how many people across the United States know about it? Or how many people across the world know about it? I would guess maybe less than like 1,000 people worldwide. And yet, it's been around for years. This is not new. It was around when I was a little kid, and it's still around today. Yet, it's gone nowhere. And why? Because there's no truth to it, right? You can't get a bunch of people on board with something that is based on no tangible, actual evidence of any sort of existence. Has anybody seen the Warrior Princess? Well, no. Did anybody see the indwelling happen? Well, no. Did anybody see any of these things? No. There's no witnesses. None. So you got a random radical few that, you know, they believe this stuff and they're a part of it and whatever. Okay. But it hasn't become a global phenomena, and it certainly hasn't become a national phenomena, and it hasn't even become a regional phenomena. Like, I'll bet you people in Seattle and Portland have never even heard of this thing, right? And that's not even that far from here. That to me also is great evidence to the truth of the existence of Jesus. People in every society, in every culture, in every part of the globe are aware of who Jesus was, that at least he was a historic man, that at least there's a claim of divinity, at least there's a claim he was killed and then was resurrected from the dead. All of these things have persisted throughout history. And that tells me there's a lot more to this than just some radical thing that a couple people in a period in time got together and decided to support an idea. And because if that was the case, it would be like Ramtha and you would have never heard about it.
Yeah. And Jamie, just to kind of follow up on that, I think when you see undue skepticism like this, it's very telling, isn't it? Because just like what Romans 1 says about the existence of God himself, that people are not just passive with regard to the existence of God, they actually suppress the truth that is all around them, that they see in nature, that they see in the design of our solar system, of our world, of the animal kingdom, of their own bodies. Everything points to the existence of a designer, right? You can't escape it. And it really is. The Bible says that, you know, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. Well, is this a fool that just lacks information, just an uneducated? Is that what they mean? No, it's a spiritual fool in the sense that the person who is so bent on keeping God's influence out of their lives is willing to say, not only am I not going to answer to this God, he doesn't even exist. Because it's basically the ultimate cop-out for any accountability. any kind of sense of my life has meaning beyond what I decide. And to say that is, it's counter to the evidence. It just does not fit what we know about the world. And in the same way, how interesting that this man, Jesus, who the Bible claims is the Son of God, who he did rise from the dead and did prove that he truly is divine through both his words and his actions that backed it up. How interesting that this is the one that is denied it by, again, in the pop culture, not in the truly scholarly circles, but just in among those who would say, yeah, I don't buy the Christian message and maybe Jesus didn't even exist. That's usually how it's put to me. Like, you're assuming, people will say, you're assuming Jesus actually existed. Yes, because there is, you know, it's like making an assumption that I'm breathing when I'm alive. You know, that's literally how much insanity is attached to the idea that Jesus didn't exist. There is so much evidence for it that it's telling that this powerful figure in history has so impacted the world. His fingerprint is all over the place. And so if he is who he claimed to be, and now when you get rid of the myth option for Jesus, well, then it comes down to what C.S. Lewis said. He's either the liar that he just fooled everybody, right? And yet he still has the greatest ethical teachings of any man in history. And yet somehow, okay, he's a liar. Well, we have to rule that out, obviously. Or he's a lunatic. Well, no one exercised or displayed a more sound mind than Jesus. No one showed greater self-control. No one showed greater understanding of the world and the human heart. You got to rule out lunatic. The last option has to be Lord. And if he's Lord, if this is his world and we belong to him, then that means that we have to bow the knee to him. And that, I contend, is why so many today in the pop culture want to deny that Jesus even ever existed, is because just to get him into the historical arena means I have to account for all this and I have to answer to him in some way. And that's what people don't want to do. It's the fallen nature of humanity that we suppress truth that holds us accountable.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.